This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Weekend when you show up for work, you look down at your sneakers and realize there's still a little blue jello shot residue. Omaha treated us well as we welcome you into this Monday edition of Money Moves live on VSiN. Apparently so. JVT, Stormy Bonantoni with you for the next 2 hours. Father's Day weekend as well. How was that for you yesterday being back home?
That was good. I like being back home. It was a very fun trip, but you know how those things go. You yearn for your own bed. Nice to see my kids and everything after a few days as well. So, yes, it was nice to be home.
Good. And the party still continued with a lot of the circuit crew, by the way. We were seeing some of the videos of the tailgates. Obviously, the jello shot numbers over at Rocco's continue to go up, up, and up. And over the course of this week, we will still talk a lot of college baseball. Not as much today, though, because we have so much going on, which is how we got to kick off the show like we always do here on the program. Producer Brian Ortega, let's set the table with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the Rundown.
Yeah, we got game five tonight in the NBA Finals Series tied at two. We watched that OKC game where they even the series 111-104 the other night from the Hilton Lobby Bar, which was fun. But Thunder win and squeak out a 6-point cover there tonight. 9.5-point home favorite.
Yes, and I have 100% clear and accurate memory of watching that game and thinking back on that and how the Thunder pulled that out. I'm excited. Look, this is series feels like, I think, much like the Stanley Cup final, it has been an eternity.
Yes.
Every game, it seems like there are years in between each. Having said that, this is really what it's about, right? Tied series, game five. These things are always what it's going to be about in terms of winning these long, lengthy best of sevens. Very excited to see what both teams have in store for one another. Have an idea, think of how I'm going to approach this. But Mark is interesting as well because we're back to the game one line to 9.5.
Yes, and we will discuss it. By the way, Pacers great in the bounce back role covering spreads, which we'll get into. But real quickly, just to follow up on your Lobby Bar comment there, I still think it was so funny. Even after the college baseball games were over on the screens, it was still like pulling teeth to get an NBA Finals game on the television.
It was. I had to ask. But the guy was on it, though. The guy, I asked the lobby bartender, hey, can you change the channel? He said, I'll try my best. But he did it for us.
He got
and that's
it
the most important part, among many other things that evening, which we don't have to cover all on the program today.
We can move on from that one. Number two in our top three items on the rundown today, trades, and potentially more trades in the NBA. The Grizzlies sent Desmond Bane to Orlando for a haul. We've got more noise around a KD trade getting louder, but the biggest move of the weekend actually in MLB, the Red Sox making waves yesterday trading their franchise star Rafael Devers to the San Francisco Giants.
Dude, so I am filling in for Adam Burke in our MLB columns, and so yesterday, you know, we do a Sunday night column every day on the Sunday Night Baseball. So I wrote up Sunday Night Baseball, then included a very great breakdown of Kyle Harrison, who was slated to start the game against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Get to my dad's house later, turn on the game in the second inning, and I'm like, why is Kyle Harrison not in the lineup? Why are they talking about Rafael Devers? I had no clue until about the third inning what the hell had just happened. That was one of those trades. They are few and far between. One of those interesting deals where I think you could say both teams won, both teams lost. There's a lot of minutiae in between, but can't wait to break it down.
Yeah, that full conversation coming up in 15 minutes. We'll also have best bets and thoughts on the 7-game slate in baseball today, which is a good reminder. Shohei Ohtani making his pitching debut for the Dodgers against the Padres tonight. And then where we're going to kick things off today, following up what was an insane U.S. Open, J.J. Spahn weathers the storm literally and figuratively. You too can shoot 40 on the front nine and win a major. Hung on through what was a tough rain delay, JVT, to put himself in position for a two-putt and the win on 18, but goes full Happy Gilmore. No, I'll just beat him now. A 64.5-foot putt to win this thing.
Yeah, the putt was absolutely insane. Dealing with the weather, seeing some of the shots too, what some of these guys had to deal with. I think Burns down the stretch had an interesting shot he had to take, and there was some great footage of just how much the water log, the grass was and whatnot. But I think to your point, at the end of the day, to put the team on your back, though, kind of moment and say, nah, you know what? Let's just do this now. Let's just end this now and sink a putt like that. If you look at the box score of J.J. Spahn's career when you're talking about these majors, boy, oh boy, is it a journey. But there's just that one little number one, and that would be over the weekend at the U.S. Open. What a moment. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Not only was it his first major win, his first top 20 in a major, his first made cut at the U.S. Open, just his second win on tour at 34 years old. Shout out San Diego State, former walk-on for the Aztecs, doing big things on tour here. 150-1 were the pre-tournament odds for Spahn. even after being the 18-hole leader round one, you were still getting good double-digit numbers on him. He was in the top two all weekend. Nobody believed he could do it. But I guess on a course like this that played as chaotic as it did, and you mentioned the water there, you have guys that are throwing clubs, that are messing up the locker room in the clubhouse, that are screaming bleep this place on the course because of the way that it was playing throughout the weekend, that I guess it really could have been anybody's tournament to win.
Yeah, I didn't see as much. Maybe you saw of it, which I'm glad, because I actually thought watching JJ Spahn win this thing, part of the conversation was going to be outlier winner because the course was set up the way that it was, because of the water, because of things like that. But I enjoy this. I think that golfers get a lot handed to them when it comes to their overall game, right? Everything's got to be perfect. You got to be quiet. You got to do all these things. That's not a one outlier tournament in Phoenix every single year, right? That becomes a party. And so I like to see them have to deal with a little bit more adversity than generally is given to them on a tournament by tournament basis. And I'm very glad that part of this conversation, at least the loud part, does not seem to be, essentially, we have an outlier winner because of the way that Oakmont was set up. I did see some complaints about it. A lot of people, I think, is it 2036 or something like that that has it next, Oakmont again? Mm. It's a little bit further down the road.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but either way, this is a good test. And if JJ Spahn can do it, I think any of you can do it. And he's the one that outlasted all of them.
I know a lot of people complained that, like, when we are watching these major events, we want to see the best golfers do the best things in the world. I kind of liked the chaos. I kind of liked seeing a lot of these guys be human and recognize how difficult this game really is. I did like the tweet from Caitlin Clark, and we'll have a little WNBA talk when Terrell Furman joins the program later on this hour. But she even tweeted, is it even fun to play at Oakmont as a regular person because of the way that it plays? And obviously for the club, it's going to be easier than it is at this event and the way that they lay things out. But I truly wonder that. Is it even fun to play there? Period.
It's fun for me.
It's fun to watch. Fun.
I saw the pictures of Wyndham Clark in the locker room. Did you see those?
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Yep. Like, it's damage
good.
Done.
Good.
Pre-tournament favorite, by the way, Scottie Scheffler tied for 7th, +4 on the weekend with Sam Burns and John Rahm. He is a +450 favorite for the next and final major of the season, the Open Championship coming up in July. Rory McIlroy, second shot at +650, finished 7 over at the U.S. Open, 17th. John Rahm, 14-1, DeChambeau and Schauffele, 16-1, and Ludvig Åberg, who, rough weekend for him, 20-1 there.
Like, this reminds me somewhat of Shinnecock way back when, right? Because I think, if I remember correctly, the Brooks Koepka won that thing 1-under, and I believe Fleetwood was either even or 1-over. He was like right there as well. But this is what the U.S. Open is supposed to be, man.
Yeah.
Like this was absolutely tremendous. And even a guy like Scottie Scheffler, I mean, you got to be kicking yourself for your opening 73 because you're right there.
Dude,
if you can make a few more putts.
Putting, that's all it is. If he just made a couple of those close putts, it could be a different tournament. But just goes to show, once again, even the best in the world can struggle, and the conditions were tough there. I lost a lot of bets on this tournament.
Yeah.
Thank goodness the hockey's been going well.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Well, I think that's part of the complaint, too. Like, when a guy like J.J. Spahn at 150-1 wins this thing, almost from wire to wire, it's generally not perceived to be a great betting event for most.
Oh, the books were over the moon.
Yeah,
nobody took J.J. Spahn money.
Right. So I think that's also part of the complaints. Like, you know, as to use Gil's term, we're so close to the sun. So part of the complaining is maybe some of that. But I thought it was an enjoyable tournament for the most part, watching with that. What transpired.
Okay, let's get your first thoughts here, and we'll have full breakdowns a handful of times throughout the course of the next 2 hours on the NBA Finals. Game 5 coming up tonight, but we mentioned it briefly off the top here. The Thunder equalized this thing after the Pacers took that 2-1 lead. They're a big favorite at home tonight, but still not as big of a favorite as what those road odds would have indicated at home, right?
Right. So this is where it becomes interesting, because especially in the closeout game in Indiana, I shouldn't call it a closeout game, the last game of the games in Indiana, we were talking about that closing 6. Mm-hmm. The Thunder get by in ridiculous cover in that game. I remember that. with the fact that Benedict Mathurin misses those free throws, the fact you can barely get all, you barely just get by and you cover that number. So again, zigzag, by the way, congratulations. You played it. You got it done. So I see this number here, and I do think part of that is this just bounce back, this blind bounce back baked into it. Like you're mentioning, 5.5 in game 3, 6 in game 4. We're talking about point spreads that are floating around 11.5, 12 back in Oklahoma City. And yet here we are after a win in cover. We are at 9.5 for game 5. So it does tell me that there is some bounce back expected from the Indiana Pacers here. But also expect to, I mean, look, just because you win in cover doesn't mean that there was the right result. And Indiana was in control most, if not all, of that game outside of the final stretch and, of course, the fourth quarter, like everybody talked about. I got to tell you, I mean, I have a really hard time figuring out what the market's been doing throughout this entire series. We've talked about this, how conflicting it is to go, yeah, I'm going to lay six and just expect for them to blindly bounce back. And now here you see the cheapest number of the entire series, or at least tied for it. Mm-hmm. And the expectation is that the Indiana Pacers are going to stay inside of this number. I think either way, though, the Thunder are too high, and I would still at this point acquiesce to the side of Indiana. They have proven to be a team that is on par with OKC, despite the market saying that the Thunder are a greatly better team.
We have also seen the totals in this series, 3-1 to the under.
Yep.
Lower total here, 224.5. You can get anywhere between 224, 224.5, 225, all available in the market right now. But is this kind of one of those things where, similar to what we've been talking about in the NHL, well, if you're just blindly betting the overs, you're cashing tickets. Is it the under in this series?
I mean, I think so. We've hit this, right? Like, I kind of thought this was going to be an under series that has played out to this point. Indiana, despite the blow up there in game three, still only has an offense rating in the series of 111.1 in the three of the four games that they have played against Oklahoma City. They have an offensive rating well under 1.1 points per possession. That's a very poor offensive rating. And in the two games in Oklahoma City, they were very, very subpar. I think that would lend itself to staying under the total because OKC themselves have been a very hit or miss offensive team throughout the postseason.
Okay, we're just getting started here on Money Moves. Coming up after the break, we'll get some more NBA Finals talk with Terrell Furman, Fantasy Pros betting analyst. He'll also give us a little lowdown on the WNBA. Midway through hour two, Josh Applebaum will give out his MLB best bets of the day. But first, when we come back from the break, while everybody's been wondering the trade destination for Kevin Durant, we got two different massive trades. Breaking it down next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Final underway. Remember, ProfitX is offering the best odds throughout. ProfitX, a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states, the first of its kind in the U.S. You'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans instead of against the books. Exchanges guarantee the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today and check it out using the code VSIN, V-S-I-N. That'll earn you up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. Again, ProfitX, code VSIN, earn up to $200 in profit cash for your first month. We're back here on Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Some massive news over the weekend. Yes, for anyone who missed it, Joey Chestnut returning to Nathan's
Famous Friends.
That is big news. That's not where I'm going here, though.
No, you just.
Very notable.
That is arguably the greatest athlete of our generation. Going back to the prime time spot where we can all watch him finally. It's absolutely ridiculous that this disagreement, just because of a sponsorship deal, very boxing-esque when you're talking about MLE, Major League Eating, deciding to take away what is the greatest athlete in their sport for a sham of a contest when he wasn't out there last year. So this is huge that you're actually going to get him back out there. Ratings took a massive hit last year. So now one would assume that they're going to rise here a little bit now that we get to see the greatest of all time. But MLE already made this mistake when they separated Kobayashi and Chestnut. And now we get to at least see Chestnut back on the grandest stage where he belongs prior to the lemonade chug, or excuse me, after the lemonade chug that we like to watch every single year. So yes, this was huge news, and it is rightfully made correct on America's birthday.
I love and appreciate that you took this so seriously, because as someone who genuinely does love the 4th of July hot dog eating contest, I'm pumped that he's going to be back. We need to be back to setting records. We need to see what those totals are going to be, high as possible. I can't wait. And you'll be in town for that, right?
No. Well, yes, probably. I can't remember what my days are like there. I know we won't be here. But I will say, look, there's something that you probably can't appreciate this, but as a former competitive eater at one stage of my life for one event at the South Point, I can understand exactly what Joey... No, I'm just kidding.
No,
but I am very excited.
I've actually requested to have like a mini hot dog eating contest on air, and I believe that you are part of the reason why we are not allowed to. So we can get into that at a later date.
Really quick. And this is somewhat recent news, but it is fitting to us. So shout out to the late John Brinkus, who just recently passed. One of the greatest sports sciences I have ever seen was they had the body out cut right where you could see like the stomach, and they stuffed the stomach with 64 hot dogs. So you could see exactly what the human stomach does when it's stuffed with that many hot dogs. It's still one of the better sports sciences I've ever seen. It's incredible.
We've had Joey Chestnut on our air, Mickey Sudo, same thing, talking about just the preparation that goes into it. It is wild. But let's get to some of the major professional sports outside of eating, starting with MLB, because I know I personally was pretty stunned to see the Red Sox move on from who is their face of the franchise, Rafael Devers, getting traded to the San Francisco Giants for two pitchers and two prospects. He remains an elite hitter. I know that there have been some disagreements and some points of contention this season, starting with third base, and he moves to DH, and then their first baseman goes down, and he'd never played first base, and he didn't want to. And so there's a lot of back and forth there. But for a guy who's kind of like the last remaining star of that crew that won a World Series with you, he just signed this massive 10-year, millions and millions of dollar deal, and you move on to him for what – I mean, I'm curious your thoughts on what the trade value is here, because that I don't really get it.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, maybe a couple of these guys pan out to be something, whatever it is. In baseball, it's always tough. You don't really understand in the moment, right? And especially when it comes to baseball, where at least in basketball, one of the trades we're going to talk about, there is like somewhat concrete value where you're talking about a first round pick. But in baseball, it isn't really the case. It's just, hey, here's this guy in double A, and we think he could project to be something. Who knows what's going to happen? It's one of those deals that we talked about where I think large picture, non-betting related, it is a troubling and I think arguably a shameful exercise by the Boston Red Sox over the last few years to ship off these guys like Mookie Betts, like Xander Bogaerts, like him now.
For sale.
For the sake, essentially, of money. Like, that's, look, you're start acting like a big boy franchise. This is what you're in this for. Your rivals, who, by the way, you just swept over the weekend, don't operate like that for the most part. So this is not something that you should be doing. Having said that, there is also an argument to be made that Rafael Devers' contract, for the most part, is going to age somewhat poorly, and that you understand that in the tail end, like Fangraphs had these projections, when you're talking about going into the years stormy of like 2031, 2032, 2033, by their projections, you know, Devers becomes about a 240 hitter who's barely eclipsing 20 home runs near the tail end of his career. It's not something you want to pay that much money for. So again, there's an understandable nature to it. But you, as a franchise, made moves signifying that you wanted to make this playoff push. You went and got Alex Bregman. You went and added to your pitching staff. And then now in the midst of this season where you're in the hunt for a playoff race, Devers after the game was in media availability talking about sweeping the Yankees. And then he's gone a couple of hours later. But I am curious for the Giants, like big picture here, I think it's a great addition in terms of their lineup. We've talked about the Giants at length in many of our different handicaps of their games. You know, in fact, I just wrote about them on Friday in the column on Major League Baseball. I hit like, hey, look, the reason why I like this under, which eventually it actually went over, was this Giants team is very average on offense. When they're away from home, they're very much below average. Devers fills a very gaping chasm when you're talking about offensive production. We'll see what he does with the position. I would think for right now, Willie Adames just sits there and plays first, and then you can just keep him at DH, keep him happy for now. But either way, it on the surface seems like a pretty solid win for San Francisco right now, given that you're able to add him to the lineup. His average is going to take a hit, but he's still going to fit really nicely in that park.
Two games back of the Dodgers right now in the NL West, 7-1 that price. They're fourth in the National League, 12-1, 13-1 odds out there. World Series odds from 22-1 to 25-1. Meanwhile, Red Sox to make the playoffs are a +200 price, minus 205-ish on the no.
That to me is the more interesting one, right, is what happens to the Red Sox. Their lineup's been decimated by injury. Devers was kind of carrying them. Now all of a sudden he's gone. Obviously Bregman is still on the injured list, and your pitching really has not been particularly great and or deep at this point right now. You're looking at a team that does seem like they're quite in danger of sliding out of this. Now, does that mean maybe somebody can reach up and take a spot and be able to overcome this Red Sox team? But it also speaks to, this is one of the reasons why, it's actually funny that these two teams made this trade. One of the reasons why I'd also use San Francisco to have the most wins in June, right, is now all of a sudden the Red Sox, who are already looking kind of as an opponent on your schedule, now become that much more like easily, not easy, but that's another series that you're looking at going, all right, cool. Like, that's not going to be that tough of a series when you're talking about going through them. So this is going to be huge as you move forward for this Red Sox team as a whole. But also, like you're talking about here, to miss the playoffs. I mean, it seems like this is, like, you can make the argument minus 205 is cheap. That I think that you can make the argument this should be higher, like minus 250 or so, comparing looking at how this is going to potentially go for this team.
That series, by the way, Red Sox and Giants that you referenced, coming up this weekend.
Yes.
So it'll be here before we know it. Let's get to the NBA as well, because the Grizzlies trade Desmond Bane to the Magic for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, four unprotected first-round picks and a first-round pick swap. And I heard you yesterday on the VSiN morning line. Your initial reaction was that this was an Orlando overpay, and I think we've seen that from a lot of people.
Yeah, like, I don't think this is astronomic overpay, right? Like, this isn't something where Orlando should get destroyed. Look, I think it's an overpay, but it's something that they desperately needed. Orlando, offensively last year, they were an abysmal team. In terms of three-point shooting, they were one of the worst, I think actually the worst, I'll double-check this one right now, in terms of overall three-point percentage by many different measurements. Right now, cleaning the glass, let me see. Yeah, they were 32.2% last year in the regular season. So they desperately need a Desmond Bane type to really help them out. I think that, like, my whole argument here now when you're talking about the basketball fit is I felt like you needed more of a playmaker, a facilitator, or someone's going to help your offense get stuck out of the mud. If you looked at it from a half-court offensive standpoint, that was one of the worst half-court offenses in the NBA. And so is Desmond Bane really going to help you out a ton? He's going to help you out with your shooting, but in terms of how smooth your offense becomes when you're taking on some of these half-court defenses, I do wonder if that really does help. He's become a better facilitator, so maybe that's going to help you out a little bit. It's a solid fit, but I would say this. The reason why it's not like this obscene overpay, remember, the expectation is that those three of those fourth-round or first-round picks aren't going to be, you would assume, very good picks because they're Orlando picks, and Orlando's going to be a playoff team. They're going to be non-lottery selections. Again, that's the hope. We've seen plenty of deals where people will share, teams will ship off first-round picks and essentially say, these aren't going to be worth that much, and then they are. I think it's a fine deal. I think it's definitely an overpay, but it's not one that Orlando deserves to be, you know, bent over the barrel for, because it fits a massive need. And in theory, if they're right, three of those first round picks are going to be non-lottery selections that don't have a ton of value.
It's one of those things where it fits a massive need. It just doesn't handle all of the holes that they have to plug, basically. Right.
Yeah. Right?
On the Memphis side, last 30 seconds, what does this in short order mean for, like, the future of the Grizzlies with Ja?
I don't know. Like, honestly, you really don't know. There's been some kind of indications, you know, wind horse fingers that they've kind of, like, some out there said, you know, might not be done. I think there's a strong argument to be made that you probably should just kind of set this thing on fire, get some assets, and move forward. Okay. It's part of a larger conversation, but I think that there's a path you can go down where you're going after some guys, and I think there's a path where you're resetting, and I would make the reset like a very small favor.
Okay, we'll continue the NBA talk coming up next, because we still are trying to wait and see what might happen with Kevin Durant. Terrell Furman of Betting Pros is going to join us next, get his thoughts on that. And of course, Game 5 coming up in the NBA Finals tonight. Series tied at 2 between the Pacers and OKC Thunder. We'll be right back on Money Moves.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Big NBA day here on the program as we welcome you back to Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you between the Desmond Bane trade and, of course, Game 5 of the NBA Finals coming up tonight. Excited to welcome in our good friend of the show, Terrell Furman, on the Progressive Guest Line. Fantasy pros, betting analyst, host of the NBA and WNBA Gambling Podcast, the Fast Break Bets Pod as well. Terrell, what's going on, my friend? How are you today?
I'm good. I'm great. Another day in the association where outside news trumps the NBA finals. It's crazy, but that's only in the NBA.
All right. So let's talk about the outside news first. Then Desmond Bane, all the first round picks. He's now a member of the Orlando Magic. First thoughts on just the overall package for Desmond Bane. What'd you think?
Well, it's less about a package for Desmond Bane, and it's more about how much does it cost to get KCP off your team? Because that's what it costs. It's not just about the Desmond Bane thing. Yes, Desmond Bane came over in the trade, but if you believe it or not, KCP was the second highest paid Magic last year and probably not a top five player on the team. And so they really, really need to just go ahead and unload his contract and get him moving on. So I think that KCP, getting him off of the Magic, bringing in an upgrade in Desmond Bane is fine. I'm not really concerned about the picks. Those are going to be back-end first-round picks. And maybe Memphis will get better use out of them than Orlando, because Orlando probably can't draft well with them anyway.
How do you think Desmond Bane fits with what they have going now with Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, Jalen Suggs? When they're at full strength, seems like a pretty formidable team in a weak East.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it feels like he's very formidable until the day he's 2 for 11 from the 3-point line. And you're like, oh, he can't do anything. Like, Desmond Bane gives you those days. You just got to be able to take what you get. Sometimes you're going to get the 1 for 7 from three. Sometimes you're going to get the 5 for 7 from three. So they needed the 3-point shooting. They needed that extra offense. And Desmond Bane is a 2-way player, so he's going to fit well with the system. I think defensively, the Orlando Magic look as strong as ever. But offensively, it still gives me a little bit more to be desired. But that's just me not being 100% a Desmond Bane guy. We'll see what a new outlook in a new city looks like for him. But for me, he's just a streaky shooter.
Okay, let's get into the finals here, Terrell, because coming into this series, all of the talk was, okay, obviously it's going to be the OKC Thunder that win this thing. The question is just in how many games? Is it 4 or 5? And then the Pacers end up taking a 2-1 series lead and you throw everything out the window. What was your handicap of the series coming in and how are you feeling about it now with the series tied at 2?
Oh, yeah, I was one of the OKC and Fivers. I feel like this is like an AA meeting where we're all sitting around. Yeah, I had OKC and 5. And then you got the guy that's really, really down bad that said, I have OKC and 4. Like, it's a really, really tough meeting in there. But I think that is still OKC's series to win. And it's just the fact of they can play to the tempo that the Pacers want to play at. And you saw that in game 2 where they got their legs under them. That first game, they were a little bit winded with how fast the Pacers were playing on the road. And then the second game, they kind of figured it out, made adjustments, and they were able to pull through in the end of the game. And they just extended themselves all the way to the fourth quarter so that they could still have that offense. I don't think they're going to have that issue here tonight. I think tonight is going to be about the defensive intensity of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've been really, really good at home over the course of these playoffs. They have been 2-9 to holding their opponents under their team total. So they are a really, really good team holding their opponent under their team total at home in the playoffs. And that's how I'm going to play this one. I like the Pacers to go under their team total here. I think that this is a game where it slows down here in OKC. There's a lot more half-court sets. And when you force the Pacers to play out the half-court and not run in transition, get turnovers, try to manufacture extra points, that's when things get a little bit scary for them.
Oklahoma City offensively has been somewhat disappointing, especially some of the other players. Any expectation for a bounce back for maybe somebody specific for OKC now that they're back at home? Because role players have been playing better back in OKC.
I think the thing about OKC is that it could really be anybody. Like you saw, Alex Caruso has had a number of big games for him. And I think Alex Caruso still could be really, really big for him here today. But Cason Wallace hasn't shot the ball well. He could just blow up for a series and he could have a game. Aaron Wiggins had a really, really good game earlier this series. I could see him coming off of the bench and being really big for them. It's really, really, really going to be how much bench production can they get? Because if their bench can outplay that Indiana Pacers bench, I think that they're going to run away with it. So I would like to look at some of the bench players. I think maybe a Wiggins. I think he's a really good player for this series. Caruso is good here. And as a starter, maybe Chet has yet another big game. You saw SGA telling Chet, we need you, man. And they constantly keep going to the big fella, giving him really good, easy looks around the rim and letting him get to the foul line. So I think Chet could have another fantastic game here.
NBA and WNBA betting analyst Terrell Furman joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Okay, so spread 9.5, total 224.5. Any bets that you have in pocket, and it could be side total, could be quarters, could be props, anything that you have tonight?
Well, besides that Indiana team total under there, again, 9-2 is the Oklahoma City Thunder to holding teams under their team total. Really, really good at home in these playoffs. I like to just go ahead and back Tyrese Haliburton to have a bad game because he's the only star that when we get to the fourth quarter, he has 10, 11 points and nobody says anything. Everybody's cool with that production. And then maybe he goes off and has a really, really big game in the fourth quarter, but he's relatively quiet throughout most of the game, especially on the road here. He's gone under this prop in both of the road games that he's played in game 1 and game 2 of these NBA finals. And I just think when you're in the Dorcher Chamber and then you finally get a switch off of the Dorcher Chamber, and you're looking at Caruso or you're looking at SGA or you're looking at Wiggins or you're looking at all the Cason Wallace, all these other better defenders that they have. It's just a really, really tough matchup for Haliburton. He got going with the home cooking and the home crowd behind him in Indiana. I don't think it's going to be like that at OKC. So I like Haliburton to go under his 30.5 ERA.
All right, with now this being a best 2 out of 3, 2 of them being in Oklahoma City, and as we have seen 4 games, how do you think this series goes as it looks? Market would say the most likely outcome is Thunder in 6. Do you buy that is the case? Can they win these next 2 games?
I do think they can win the next 2 games. I will give Indiana a little bit more credit and say Indiana may have some one more home game magic in them where they can get the Thunder into a close game and then Tyrese Haliburton can take over in the fourth quarter. So I could see an Indiana, and I'm probably going to be on Indiana plus the points no matter what the line is, just because OKC is so bad at covering the number on the road in these playoffs. And so I could see it. I could see it. I'm probably not going to bet it, though. I could already see myself when we get to game six, I'm probably just going to take Pacers plus the points because it's hard to trust OKC covering the number in these playoffs.
Okay, let's shift gears to the WNBA here for the last couple of minutes. The New York Liberty, your favorites to win WNBA title, they dropped their first game of the season over the weekend in Caitlin Clark's return. What did you think of that performance, and could the Fever as a whole be better than maybe some people thought this season? What do you think?
No, I don't. And
no?
Caitlin Clark is amazing, but the Indiana Fever have problems, and Stephanie White, when Caitlin Clark was out, showed that, you know, there's still questions about her in aspect as a head coach. The offense was absolutely abysmal without her, and so if you tell me you have a day where Ryan Howard is able to guard Caitlin Clark and she can't do anything offensively like she did earlier this season, then it's going to be really, really bad for the Indiana Fever. It's going to be on the entire team, not just her. And I just don't think that they're a good enough team to keep up with the Liberty, who weren't at full strength. They were missing two starters in that last game, Jonquel Jones and Leone Fibich. And Leone Fibich is a great on-ball defender that where Caitlin Clark was playing against them the first time, it was Fibich and Natasha Cloud. That was really, really making life tough for her. So I don't think she's going to have one of those big explosion games going up against the New York Liberty. And ultimately, there's two teams at the top here in the WNBA. It's the Liberty and it's the Lynx. Now, the Fever are a good team. They're the tier below, but I wouldn't say that they're right up there with the championship contenders just yet.
So if I presented you Lynx and Liberty versus the field, is there any other team out of that field that you would look at that could upend the boat and maybe even just make it to the WNBA finals, or are we destined for a rematch?
No, I think we're destined for a rematch. I mean, it would be nice. It would be cool, and it'd probably be a fun series. But as of right now, nobody that I think can turn on the mode defensively and offensively like the Minnesota Lynx and the New York Liberty. I think the Indiana Fever here, while they are better defensively with Stephanie White, the offense just doesn't look good. And if Caitlin Clark doesn't bail them out in a lot of possessions there, it gets really, really ugly. And so I think that this is a better spot where the Lynx and the Liberty, when fully healthy, are able to go in there and be dominant. And the only time that they took a loss is when they had injuries, Jonquel Jones and Leone Fibich for the Liberty. And then Jessica Shepherd, who is a 13th in the WNBA rebounder, just went over to play Eurobasket, and the Lynx took a L. So when both of these two teams are full strength, it's just really, really hard to see anybody coming close.
Last 60 seconds, a quarter of the season in the books. Can anybody catch Nafisa Collier for MVP?
No, easy enough. I don't even need the whole 60 seconds. Have you seen what Fee is doing this year? It's insane.
Minus 370, odds on favorite on the board for a reason. Terrell, awesome stuff as always, buddy. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate you.
All right, see you.
You have that bet in pocket, don't you? You have a Nafisa
Collier? Plus 275.
Look at you.
Something like that, yeah.
Who knew? JVT, WNBA expert as well.
I mean, come on. She was. Yeah. It was right when Caitlin Clark got injured, and it was just one of those, like, let's just take this. She's averaging a million points and rebounds per game. She's been incredible, and sure enough, looks like you're right. We get Lynx and Liberty again. The series was pretty good last year, so I wouldn't say no to it.
Clark, by the way, plus 270 on the odds board, and then the odds just fall off a cliff after that. Brianna Stewart, 45-1. Asia Wilson, 50-1, so on and so forth. Remember, Terrell Furman, check out the WNBA and the NBA gambling podcast on Sports Gambling Podcast Network, doing great work over there at Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. We're going to take a timeout when we come back, closing out hour one with a little Call Me Crazy, but don't miss it.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, remember everybody, First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races each and every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. You can sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use our promo code VSIN200. That'll help you claim a 20% rebate your first 60 days up to $200. Check it out today. Head over to firstbet.com.
Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy. For Call Me Crazy, but
Okay, let's have a little fun on this Overreaction Monday. Time for Call Me Crazy But, and I'm going to start in the National Hockey League, JBT. Call Me Crazy But, the Oilers aren't dead yet. Plus 124 underdogs in Game 6. Do they look overmatched? Yes. Does Florida look like the best team in the NHL? Yes. But let's not put this behind them. We haven't really seen momentum carry over game to game in this series yet. And do you remember the Miracle on Ice speech when Herb Brooks comes out there and says, hey, if we play them 10 times, they might win 9, but not this game, not today. I think the Oilers are fully capable of extending this series, ladies and gentlemen. And plus, here's this. I found this. Series clinching games have not necessarily gone the Panthers' way. Since 2023 under Paul Maurice, the Panthers are 10-8 in potential series clinchers.
Sounds like a
winning record to me. Their last two chances at home in the postseason, they were shut out both times. A 2-0 loss in Game 6 of the second round against Toronto, 3-0 loss in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Final against Carolina. Give the Oilers a chance, plus 124. Am I crazy?
Yeah, of course.
Look, come on.
I think at this point right now, the Florida Panthers have to be very disappointed with themselves. Up 3-1 in Game 1, you lose the game. Up 3-0 was that Game 4 we watched, right? You blow that one. And then you have kicked the crap out of them in two of the games that you have won here in this series. This is, after we have seen now some evidence, a series in which the Panthers have allowed the Oilers to stick around. They should have this already in hand. And now we go back to the daunting chunky ice where everybody's all upset about what's happening, humidity, air conditioning. I think your boys are cooked.
And yet...
who are we talking to?
And yet the Edmonton Oilers still have a win in Florida.
Was
two
it
wins
Mike
in the
Palm?
Series.
Somebody we were talking to out in, as I now call it, the Haw. I think they call it that. They were like, they're going to kick their ass here in game. They're going to go back to Edmonton to kick their ass. And sure enough, they went back to Edmonton to kick their ass. And now you got to close this thing out on the road. Come on! Yeah, they're cooked.
Not dead yet.
No, you're not. Technically, you are correct. They are not dead yet. This series is still going on. Yes.
Hit me with your first one.
All right. I'm going to go with one that you're going to absolutely hate. Call me crazy, but Baltimore Orioles might make a playoff push in the American League. Orioles are starting to hit their stride a little bit here,
Orioles. They had a good 2 weeks. Come on,
Stormy.
They swept the Angels, and JBT's like, oh, my God, they're the best team in baseball.
Since the start of June, they're one of the better lineups in Major League Baseball. I think what ties into this as well, this is why I included this, there are tentacles, ramifications, if you will, of the Rafael Devers trade, where maybe a team ahead of them, well ahead of them, we will admit, is going to slip out. I think they can catch the Angels. Angels aren't particularly great. Well, the Rangers have started to turn things around. They've won 5 straight now or 4 straight now at this point, but I think above them got a little bit weaker. We don't need them to win the American League East. They're 10-1 to make the playoffs. They are 6 games out of the final wild card. I don't think it's that daunting, and they're playing a little bit better baseball. Orioles, make it a playoff push. I'm
21st
crazy.
In batting average, 23rd in hits,
those
24th in
numbers.
Run scored.
Filter it for the start of June.
Again, they've had a good two weeks.
Exactly. See, you don't want to do it.
They've had a good 2 weeks. They're still bottom 4 in run differential in the MLB. The only teams better than them are the Marlins, the A's, and the Rockies.
Third in weighted on base average, Baltimore Orioles. Third in weighted runs created plus.
Pitching has been better, but
fourth
a bottom
in,
6 team bullpen
batting
ERA.
Average. How
no,
about that?
No, not doing it.
Okay.
Not
just
doing
watch
it.
Just replay this when they make a push for the postseason.
Let's stick with baseball, though, because you mentioned the Devers of it all. Call me crazy, but the Red Sox did know they could take more time and try to shop Devers around, right? Like, the trade deadline isn't for another 6 weeks. You would think if this was something you were going to do, you would have tried to drum up a little bit more interest, see if you could make a little more out of this. Instead, they traded him to the Giants for a package that involves an injured reliever, a starter they sent to AAA, and 2 non-top 100 prospects. I don't think that's crazy to say they could have done better for your face of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to, like, yes, you could talk around. I don't think you're crazy about that. My problem is like, do you know what James Tibbs III is going to be? Like, he was the Giants' 4th overall prospect when he got shipped off. We'll see what that means for them. But, like, I find it hard to judge baseball trade packages because they're not concrete. They're not these first-round picks that we know get flopped around in the other sports. I don't really have a familiarity with how hockey trades are, but maybe you have you could put a little bit more background to it. But, like, dude, in 3 years, what if James Tibbs is like the best outfielder in like baseball? Who knows what the hell is going to happen?
Sure, we can't determine.
Or he's going to toil around at Double A for forever. Like it's going to be it. So like I made the joke to you guys during the break. Like I don't know. I was watching the grainy footage of him playing Double A baseball, and I was like, this kid's got a mean swing. Who knows what's going to happen? But I'm with you in the general sense of shipping off Devers for pretty much nothing that is going to help you this year for a team that is trying to make a playoff push does not make that much sense.
That's where I'm coming from. Yeah. For nothing concrete right now when there's still a lot of potential. Again, we talked about it earlier, that number of being a minus 200 to miss the playoffs should probably be higher for them now. Okay, where are you going?
All right, other side of the coin here. Yeah, call me crazy, but the Giants can totally win the National League. They can win the National League West. I'm in on this thing. Their pitching is great. We already know this, especially the front end of this rotation. Logan Webb pitched a solid game for them on Friday against Los Angeles Dodgers, helping them get a win. Robbie Ray continues to be in the NL Cy Young candidacy. You've got dudes that have some pretty interesting stuff. Short sample size here, but Hayden Birdsong looks pretty good in the five outings that he's had so far this year. The rotation is in pretty good shape. The thing that you've been waiting for is whether or not this team's offense was going to come along. And now all of a sudden, you're looking at a group that actually could be coming along here at this point. I trust this Giants team. I think you have some questions potentially about what you're looking at for the bullpen at certain spots. But guess who's got the best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball? The San Francisco Giants. I think they can still win this division. Now that Devers is out there, if they have the pitching, let's go 12-1 to win the National League. I think it's time.
I like it. And I like that angle, especially because at 7-1 in the NL West, even though the Dodgers are only a couple games up right now, you still have to imagine that they're going to pull away and win that division. So maybe a good angle is if you have to play that in the postseason, right? Like, why couldn't you win a short series against the Dodgers? Anything in like a small sample size, I think you've got a better shot at. Like, so I like that number.
In this regular season, how many bullpen games are we going to have over the Los Angeles Dodgers? It's like every single day, it's Johnny Holstaff. Just throw them out there and we'll make our way through it. At some point, you got to have the high-end pitching. I think the Giants have it. I'm in.
I know there is an NBA one that you wanted to get to as well that we missed out a little bit earlier.
We didn't hit on this when we talked about it as part of the conversation with the other trade when it came to Desmond Bain. 8-1 or better, give me the Magic to win the Eastern Conference next year.
Really?
Like, I understand. See, the two things, I know this is shocking to some. Two things can be true at once, that I think it's a slight overpay for Desmond Bain, that I also think that Orlando now has the makings of being one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Now, part of that is what seems to be a very weak Eastern Conference, with now the Boston Celtics being gone from at least the top of the Eastern Conference. Whether or not Giannis comes back, that is a weak Milwaukee Bucks team. You're going to be one of the best, if not the best, defensive teams in the NBA. I think this is a team that is set up nicely to be a very good regular season team, to be a top-seeded Eastern Conference team, and a contender to win the Eastern Conference. I think Orlando is worth investing in now that they have Desmond Bane to win the Eastern Conference.
Interesting. Okay, you like? I didn't realize that you liked it that much though. But especially at that number.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it really is. It's a very good fit. Again, when you were that bad at shooting, Desmond Bane gives that to you. You miss nothing in terms of defensive play when he's out there, right? He fits everything that you want. And this is a team, and I think Bane will buy into that, that really at the top has gotten these guys to buy into playing defensive-oriented basketball game in and game out, every single one of those. And in the regular season, that means a lot. And when you look at the East, Indiana deserves to be the favorite. After that, there is a vacuum. There is nobody that you could point to. I mean, I meant it when we talked about this months ago after the Achilles injury to Tatum, when I said, like, hey, look, like the 76ers might be worth investing in to win the East. But this team, I think, has really high upside, and I think it's worth looking at for them to win the Eastern Conference.
Something that we haven't really touched on this hour, and with only 90 seconds left in this block, I think it could be a good carryover to the start of hour two here. But the Kevin Durant of it all, we find out this trade over the weekend when everybody's been waiting to find out, is anything going to happen with Giannis, and where is Kevin Durant going to go? It's not if, it's when and where at this point with KD. The latest report, the Miami Heat, San Antonio Spurs, and Houston Rockets are his preferred trade destinations.
Yes. Did you see the follow-up to that report?
What?
It seems like both camps are talking a little bit here, because there was a follow-up that said the Phoenix Suns do not feel obligated to trade him anywhere that he wants to go. And they don't have to.
And why would you, too, if you're them?
Now, I don't know what the package is going to look like for Kevin Durant. You'll get something for him. Some of those teams, specifically Miami, don't really have much to offer. They ship off Tyler Hero now that we know that he doesn't believe in anything prior to 1950. Maybe that's going to be something. But either way, Durant will shift the market a little bit. But I don't think it's going to be anything where, depending on where he goes, you're going to go, that team is now the contender in their respective conference or division.
Let's follow this up a little bit more on the other half of the break. We also do need to dive into some more Stanley Cup final talk. We've got game 5 in the NBA finals coming up tonight as well.
I'm proud of you.
Proud of me?
Yes.
For what?
Well, because you had a Dallas Cowboys take apparently somewhere in here. Yes. And Dak Prescott's legacy was already covered on mainstream media this morning. So I'm proud of you.
I'll explain to you why when we come back as well. Don't go anywhere. More Money Moves after this.